Thank you very much, Sir Crispin, and good evening to all of you. I think science, since it became organized, and it's in the last 200 years, couldn't have become an organized enterprise without being directed. It's just that the objectives of direction, the processes of direction are changing. The most important way in which science has been directed has been through funding. The discussion we've just had, the last presentation, was very clearly showing how what science does, where it goes, what it produces, is very much a function of what money goes into it. And since the money happens to be taxpayer money, one would imagine that those whose money is being used should have a say about where they'd like it to go. That is the external democracy context of science. But there's a second reason why we need a widening of the circle of participation in science. And that has to do with the fact that increasingly the new sciences are creating impacts which are borne by the larger public, whether they be in form of environmental impact, social impact, health impact. And those who carry the burden of their impact also need to have a say whether they want that impact or not. They are part of the enterprise by the very definition of the impact. There are other ways in which science has been directed. It's been directed in terms of content. I think we shouldn't forget that so much of the sciences that evolved in the grand institutions, like the one in which we stand and you sit, redefined what science was in a very dramatic way. They didn't just redefine who a scientist was. They redefined dramatically what would be counted as knowledge. They redefined what would be counted as unscientific. And the sciences of ancient knowledge cultures like China, like India, were just put into the non-science category. Today, large numbers of people in the world are turning to Chinese medicine, turning to Ayurveda, and yet we've had 200 years of non-funding of these tremendous systems of knowledge. They've survived in spite of no attention, which tells us something about their resilience. Choices were made. Directional choices were made to give a preference to allopathy worldwide. Decisions were made that chemical agriculture would be the way agriculture would be done. And now decisions are being made that agriculture based on genetic engineering is the way agriculture should go. In fact, I see the recent speech of Tony Blair as very much a direction of science. It so happens that Mr. Blair ended up justifying his speech and its inspiration from my country. He actually said that the idea of making the speech has been in my mind for some time. The final prompt for it came, curiously enough, when I was in Bangalore in January. I met a group of academics who were also in business in the biotech field. They said to me bluntly, "Europe has gone soft on science. We are going to leapfrog you and you will miss out." They regarded the debate on GM here and elsewhere in Europe as utterly astonishing. They saw us as completely overrun by protesters and pressure groups who used emotion to drive out reason, and they didn't think we had the political will to stand up for proper science. And you know, frankly, no Indian speaks that language, even if you are in the biotech industry. So somewhere in the middle, a PR firm entered. But the interesting point about the institutions of Bangalore, because I'm a product of those institutions, I've taught in those institutions, especially the Institute of Science, I've worked with scientists at the Agriculture University, two leading institutions that are getting impacted by a new direction of science. And the new direction of science is the commercialization of science. Monsanto has a $30 million lab harvesting 30 years of the best work in Indian molecular biology by entering the Indian Institute of Science. I know scientists who have questioned that collaboration, who have wanted. We've had debates, we've had public debates, we've had protests, we've had students sitting on the lawns wanting the agreement between the Institute of Science and Monsanto made public. Very basic democratic demand. It is still secret. 4 or 5 years after Monsanto entered. About 4 months ago, just a little before Mr. Blair would have visited, and therefore I'm sure he couldn't have missed the news on it, the agriculture campus grounds were given away for a new biotechnology park. And the agriculture students said, this is public property. It has to be used for the public good. We need far more attention for organic agriculture, sustainable agriculture that has been neglected all these years. They sat in protests. They were arrested. They were beaten. So it isn't the case that UK has a special protest tendency. Irresponsibly introduced biotech has a habit of generating protests wherever it goes. And I think that really is the issue of what we face today in the challenge about the direction of science, that science is being directed, but it's being directed by invisible actors. And it's interesting that not once in this big speech of Mr. Blair did the real actors on whose behalf he was speaking get mentioned. It's being narrowed down, and in any case, in the last 200 years, science has not had the capacity, scientific research hasn't had the capacity to open itself to public scrutiny and public accountability, even though it's been a public enterprise. There's still massive public subsidies. They will have to be. Public institutions will be the main intellectual subsidy. And yet, the privatization of science is going to destroy what little fragile internal democracy science had. It didn't have external democracy. But at least you could go and present your paper, and your colleagues would either thrash it or cite it 500 times if it was brilliant. If you had a fake data, you'd be torn down by your peer reviews. In the last decade of research on the cutting-edge discipline of genetic engineering, there is no peer-reviewed publications. And any time a scientist has dared to do independent research in an honest way as part of a member of a scientific community, they have been sacrificed. We just have to look at just two cases of brilliant scientists with the most brilliant work. Arpad Pusa in this country, and more recently, Shapela in Berkeley. So doing science has become a hazard. Science is being misdirected into non-science. And I think that is the crisis we face. And that is the crisis Mr. Blair is not just evading, but he's covering up. He actually says that the protesters are blocking science because you must let, he talks about the difference between facts and judgments. And then he goes on to talk about the fact that there's only a small band of people who genuinely want to stifle informed debate. But a small group can, as has happened in our country, destroy experimental crops before we can determine their environmental impact. I don't know what that research would have concluded, neither do the protesters, but I want to reach my judgments after I have the facts and not before. Now, there's so much garbage in that para that I know I'm running short of time, so I can't deconstruct it all, but very rapidly. Science tells you you don't need to do releases of genetically modified organisms to get pollination distances. You don't need to do releases and experimental field tests to be able to understand the emergence of super pests and super weeds through the transfer of these traits-related crops. These are done through models. These are done through non-GM crops, pollination transfer. Every one of the questions he says, the facts that he's waiting for by deliberate release, are facts that good science can give and should give through ecology, through good modeling, through all the other instruments. But the most important issue is he talks constantly about science telling us the facts as if science is a mister who gets up and speaks. But science is an amazing, complex, pluralistic community of actors, and those different voices are saying different things within science today. And to stifle the fact that there is a debate internal to science about the public future of science, its direction, its accountability, and to make it look like a band of protesters versus this magnificent enterprise. Well, the magnificent enterprise is precisely what's being massacred in this new direction. I just was reading the recent issues of The New Scientist, and I just want to end with this. In the interview with Amartya Sen, his contribution, he talks about how economics needs to be modeled on science because science is based on give and take. He talks about an old Bengali saying that knowledge is a very special commodity. The more you give, the more you have. Science, broadly speaking, is the cultivation of that giving. You can't have science without sharing knowledge. The second crisis of the new direction of science is we are getting efficient systems to harvest public science and the results of public science, but no thought has been applied to how will the give and take that makes knowledge grow continue in the future. Take patenting, take IPRs, take the shutting down of conversations between colleagues who are worried about the theft of their proprietary knowledge and the contract they have with Monsanto behind their backs. You've got a system in which we are actually, if we don't have a bigger debate on science, we are going to see the end of science. And I think that is the real challenge.